everyone. Welcome to the very first Storycast of Val's Tales. We're delighted to have you with us. If you enjoy listening to the stories, please sign up to our site to ensure you receive notice of future productions. You can help us celebrate our successes and support us through any disasters. If nothing else, it should be fun. Let me introduce you to the team. I'm Val Portelli, published author and writer of short stories. Our narrator is my sister Wendy Walker, actress and voiceover artist. And last but not least, Wendy's daughter Jazz, producer and referee where necessary. Three crazy ladies who came up with one of those, it seemed a good idea at the time, ideas, before we realised just how much we'd taken on. We hope you'll stick around. We can only get better and we'd love your support. Let me tell you a little about what you can expect. Although we're starting with some Christmas themes, the stories cover all genres and should have something to appeal to everyone. We'd be delighted to hear from you with any feedback, preferences and comments. Without you, we'd only be talking to ourselves and that could start arguments. Before each story will be a short intro explaining the inspiration of how it came about, and at the end will be all the blah blah stuff in case you're interested in knowing more. See you soon, and thanks. I wrote this story after listening to a song called Follow Me, recorded by Vernon and the GIs. It has a beautiful haunting melody, but you'll need to keep the tissues ready. Thanks for the inspiration, Alan Peacock.
Follow me. I met her at a Christmas party. They were not usually my kind of thing, but my workmates nagged me into it. Just to keep in the spirit of the season, I agreed to go for an hour or so before I made my excuses and adjourned to the pub for a quiet pint. I knew I'd made a mistake when the invitation showed the dress code as formal attire for the gentleman and carriages at 1 p.m. By then it was too late, so I hired a penguin suit and resigned myself to an evening of boredom, vowing never again. The 12-seater minibus hired for the occasion deposited us on the pavement in front of a swanky West End hotel, and immediately hired flunkies rushed to usher us inside waiting for their tip. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not tight. It's just that paying for common courtesy goes against all I believe in. My first impressions were correct as we entered a gaudy ballroom, drank overpriced fizz, ate things on sticks from the trays of passing waiters and made small talk. Eventually we were directed into the dining area and after giving our names we were seated at large round tables with strangers. It seems it was a deliberate policy to split up groups to enhance the friendly atmosphere. My immediate neighbour was a self-made man with a fortune, as he explained to me within 5 minutes of meeting him. On his other side was an expensively dressed lady, and I use the word in its loosest sense, with a low-cut dress and a false giggly laugh. They were well suited. Once he had established that I wasn't a suitable contact for his social circle, he ignored me and spent all his time flirting with her. The seat to my left was empty. I wasn't sure if I was pleased or not. On the one hand, it meant I didn't have to listen to banal conversation. On the other, it meant I had no one to talk to, which would make the hours drag even more. The first course was served, something chefy and artistic, but not what you would actually call food. I was sorely tempted to excuse myself and disappear, knowing my absence would probably not even be noticed. Just at that moment, a waiter settled a lady, and this time, I'm not being sarcastic, into the chair next to me, and I turned to see the most gorgeous woman I've ever seen in my life. She wasn't traditionally beautiful. Her nose was a bit too big, her hair was windswept, and her face was flushed. Apologising for being late, she gave me a smile to melt any man's heart. She laughed when I said she hadn't missed much, just as the waiters returned to serve our main course. Glancing at my plate, my expression must have shown on my face as she looked at hers before we both got a fit of the giggles. Although we didn't eat much, the evening improved no end, and we stuck it out for another hour until a really dire band started up. In my spare time, I was a singer in a rock and roll band, and when they'd finished massacring one of my favourite songs, I looked at her and said, "I've had enough. Follow me." In an instant, she replied, "I'll get my coat. See you outside in 5 minutes." That was it. From then on, we were inseparable. The following Christmas, my gift to her was an engagement ring. After I'd got down on one knee and slipped it onto her finger, she accepted my proposal and made me the happiest man in the world. "I've got something for you too," she said as she took my hand. "Follow me." Christmas morning, we woke to the sound of church bells, and that's when we decided to get married at Christmas the following year. Winter turned into summer, and before we knew it, autumn had arrived. We walked hand in hand through the falling leaves, making arrangements for when we would be together forever. That winter was one of the hardest on record, but we stuck to our plans for our wedding on Christmas Eve. Even if some of our friends were snowbound and unable to get to the ceremony, the important thing was we would be together. Christmas Day would see us as husband and wife in the house we'd bought for our future. I'd been living there for a few months, although she was temporarily renting digs up north until she finished her work contract and travelled down to join me. My main concern was that the weather would hinder her transport plans, but she phoned me as she was boarding the coach to say she was on her way to follow me to start our new life together in the south. She told me she loved me, couldn't wait to see me, and would get to London in the early evening on the day before Christmas Eve. Keeping with tradition, she was staying in a London hotel on the day before our wedding, so I wouldn't see her until we took our vows in church. Even so, I checked my mobile every few minutes, waiting for her message that she had arrived safely and was now going to catch up with some sleep, so she would look her best when we exchanged rings. For the sake of something to do, I switched on the television and watched the news. It was all about the horrendous weather, cancelled trains, and videos of cars slipping and sliding on the ice. Just as I went to turn it off, I caught a news flash about a major crash on the M1, where a coach had skidded on the ice, causing a multiple pile-up. Bit by bit, the details emerged, and I sat up all night until finally they published an emergency contact number for friends and relatives. When my messages and calls to my fiancé's mobile went unanswered, I eventually managed to get through to the emergency number. I tried not to snap when they asked if I was a relative, but finally my desperation must have got through when I explained we were due to be married tomorrow. "I'm very sorry. That name has been identified as one of the people who didn't survive." I put down the phone as the operator was still talking, giving information about the hospital the bodies had been taken to and offering her sympathy. Early morning on Christmas Eve, I woke to find the television still on and my neck aching from where I'd finally fallen asleep in the chair. I spent the day in a dream, thinking this was to have been my wedding day, but unable to motivate myself to let people know or cancel the arrangements. Just as dusk was falling, I woke from a kind of sleep and, glancing out of the window, saw the snow was still falling and a bitter wind was blowing. Nothing mattered now, although I did grab a thick coat before setting off to the local cemetery. As it was Christmas, the gates were still open for people to lay their tributes for their loved ones, although there was no one about. Despite the cold, I wandered about aimlessly until I found myself in the neglected, older part of the grounds. The graves on the newer part of the cemetery all held floral accolades, but here there was nobody left to remember the ones who had gone to meet their maker 100 years or more before. Even the carving on the tombstones had faded with the years, so the names could no longer be read. I sat down between two overgrown memorials and huddled into my overcoat. The sound of church bells woke me, and I realised that no one had thought to check this part of the cemetery when they locked up to enjoy their family Christmas. I wasn't worried. I'd nothing to go home to and no reason to leave, even if I was blue and shivering. What did I care about hypothermia if there was no warm body to bring me to my senses? At first, I couldn't make out the words, but gradually, my senses returned from my semi-comatose state, and I recognised my darling, dressed in her wedding gown, walking up the aisle of the church towards me. The choir was singing and our friends were smiling when she stopped, turned, and made her way back towards the door of the chapel. The snow was falling again as I saw her leave the church and glide back towards the cemetery. "Wait," I sobbed. "Please don't leave me." Then I heard her voice calling softly, "I'm here, my love. Follow me." Thanks for listening. If you're enjoying these stories, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow Val's Tales on social media. Details coming up.